Hello, everyone. It's nice to see everyone's face. My name is Kirby Fai. I'm listed as Amy Hollins if you join via WebEx, but this is Kirby Fai with the department. Just a few things we'd like to go over. First, welcome everyone to the Region 4 Planning and Policy Council. I really appreciate you all being so flexible. Typically, you would all meet in November, so I appreciate you all coming together to meet with us today. Just some reminders, per Governor Lee's Executive Order 60, which is why we're meeting virtually, this meeting will be recorded. So with that being said, if you're not speaking, please be sure to mute your phone or your computer. I'm hearing some feedback right now. So if you're not muted, please go ahead and do that. If you have any questions or if you're presenting, if you don't mind to please state your name first for the recording, that would be helpful when capturing minutes as well. So Robin, I'm gonna go ahead and go through the attendance and what I have now. First, I'll go with the individuals who have joined via computer because I can see your names. And then I will go to the individuals who have called in. So like I said, my name is Kirby Fai with the department. I see Angie Thompson here, Avis Easley, Pamela Binkley. Hold on, I've got to try to scroll down here, having problems. Dalmy, who's Dalmy, listed as Dalmy? What's your full name for the minute?
I'm Dalmy Sanchez.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
I see Dia Cirillo, Erica Davenport, Evelyn Jurgen, Heather Snell, I see Jack. Jack, what is your last name for the minute?
Jack Blum, B-L-U-M, Blum.
Hi, Jack. I see Julie Thacker, Cooper or Cal Bryant, Kurt Hipple, Robin Nobling, Shara Biggs. Hey, Shara. Susan Hinson. Susan Mee, Tom Starling, Rusty, Totten Emerson, Tristan Petty, and let me see here. I'm going to go back to the individuals who have called in. I have an 865 number. Can you please state your name? Oh, it looks like we lost them. Okay, I have a 615 number that ends in 28. Can you please state your name?
Bill Friscus Warren.
Oh, hi, Bill.
Hey.
And I see a 615 number that ends in 62.
Hi, this is Rama Kavi.
Hi, Rama.
Hi, how are you?
And I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I think we have everyone. If I've missed you, please let me know. I don't think I have, but we can always touch base again towards the end, Robin. I'm going to hand it over to you.
All right. That's terrific. Thank you so much. Well, welcome, everyone. We're so glad you could join us today for our November meeting taking place in October for Region 4. We've got a pretty busy agenda today, and I appreciate you coming in for that. Welcome to our new members. If I want to give a pitch to membership, if you know of anyone that you think would be a good candidate for this. This is organizations, individuals, and family members with either mental health or A&D, alcohol and drug abuse and substance use issues that can contribute to Region 4 and especially to the needs assessment. Our focus today will be on the needs assessment. I want to welcome everyone to that. We've had our roll call. I'd like to Rusty to present the minutes for us, please. Rusty, you're on mute.
Sorry, I had a trouble taking myself off mute. I believe the minutes were sent out in the email that went out the other day.
They were.
Has anybody had a chance to review them, check them for inaccuracies, corrections?
Can we call for a motion? Does anybody would anyone like to put forth a motion to accept the minutes?
I'll move acceptance. Angie.
Thank you, Angie. Anyone that would like to second that?
This is Evelyn. I second.
Thank you, Evelyn. Do we have any discussion on the minutes? Okay. I'm not seeing any. Are there any objections to approving the minutes as they stand?
Sounds like they are approved.
All right. Hearing none, we will approve the minutes unanimously. Thank you very much. All righty. We're going to move on to our quarterly report. And Kirby, would you do us the honor of doing the report?
Sure can. Before I get started, I just want to point out that Elliot Finsley joined the call after we took attendance. So Elliot is here, as well as Jan Schneider, just for your minutes, Rusty. Okay, let me pull up my update. Rusty, I'll send this to you so that you can include, you could just copy and paste it and put in your minutes to share with the council, because there are a few links in here that will be helpful for everyone. The first update, year two of the FY21 plan is in its final FY2021 three-year plan is in its final stages. I believe I shared it on Friday with you all to review to see if you have any edits or suggested changes or questions. Please do so if you can by the end of the day this Friday and just let me know. FY2021 of the mental health block grant application was submitted to SAMHSA on August 13th. FY21 mental health block grant report is in progress. A draft was shared with regional council leadership to review within, I think it was last week, the beginning of last week.
I sent it this morning, Kirby.
Yeah. The department and its community mental health provider partners are excited to expand the state's behavioral health safety net to uninsured children. The program offers an array of essential mental health services for uninsured Tennessee children ages 3 to 17. The services are available for family incomes at or below 138% federal poverty level. Governor Lee and the Tennessee General Assembly appropriated $7.6 million in this new state funding in the current fiscal year to create the Children's Behavioral Safety Net. The services available through this program include assessment and evaluation, individual therapy, group and family therapy, case management, transportation, family support services, medication management, and pharmacy assistance and coordination. Currently, a total of 14 community mental health centers with 136 locations statewide are participating in the program. I've included a link in here that you can click on. It's on the department website, but it's a direct link that shows you a behavioral health safety net provider in your area that's offering the children's behavioral safety net. The department is also expanding its school-based behavioral health liaison program to all 95 counties in the state. Governor Lee budgeted and the Tennessee General Assembly appropriated an increase of $3 million for the current fiscal year in order to expand the program. The school-based behavioral health liaisons provide face-to-face consultation with classroom teachers who enhance learning environments for children who have or are at risk for serious emotional disturbance, behavioral problems, or substance use disorders. Liaisons also provide training and education for classroom teachers and serve as a link between schools and families. Currently, liaisons serve elementary, middle, and high schools in 36 counties. In state fiscal year FY20, which ended June 30th, liaisons served about 7,500 children and youth and 2,500 teachers. Liaisons also help more than, sorry, that's my dog. One second. The joys of working from home, the mailman. Liaisons held more than 11,000 individual counseling sessions and 7,300 individual consultations. The Tennessee Recovery Navigators are celebrating two successful years of connecting people who come into emergency rooms with treatment for substance use disorder. Navigators are individuals with lived experience of addiction and at least 2 years in recovery who are able to use their history to relate to the patients they meet. Since the program started in June 2018, the Tennessee Recovery Navigators have interfaced with 3,776 people in emergency rooms. In FY20, 77% of patients who met with a navigator were placed into treatment. Navigators are employed by 8 community agencies spread across the state. In 2 years, the reach of the program has grown to 38 hospitals in 21 Tennessee counties. When it began, the program focused primarily on emergency room patients who survived an opioid overdose. As it grew, the program's scope expanded to include individuals presenting in active withdrawal or with a primary substance use disorder. If you go to www.tn.gov/recovery-navigators, there is a new report published by the department that details the successes of the Recovery Navigator program and includes testimonials and data. So I encourage you all to go there if you can. And last two updates I have here are concerning funding, which I believe were shared via email with Regional Council Leadership. So you may have already seen these before. So I'm just going to go over them briefly in case you haven't. On October 1st, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, through the Health Resources and Services Administration, announced $20 billion in new funding for providers on the front lines of the coronavirus pandemic. Under this Phase 3 general distribution allocation, providers that have already received provider relief fund payments will be invited to apply for additional funding that considers financial losses and changes in operating expenses caused by the coronavirus. Additionally, previously ineligible providers, such as those who began practicing in 2020, will also be invited to apply. And an expanded group of behavioral health providers confronting the emergence of increased mental health and substance use issues exacerbated by the pandemic will also be eligible for relief payments. The deadline to apply is Friday, November 6th. I've included a direct link that details more information on how to apply. It's too long for me to read off, so it will be included in the minutes. But if you go to www.hhs.gov/coronavirus, you should be able to find that information as well. And lastly, the department has secured an additional $7.2 million in federal grant funding to respond to mental health and addiction concerns caused by COVID-19 and recent natural disasters. SAMHSA has awarded the department an additional $3.5 million to continue to address mental health concerns caused by COVID-19. This funding supplements a previous grant of almost $1 million. Crisis counseling services through this program are now available in all 95 counties. And I have a link that you can click on that sends you directly to where these COVID-19 counseling services are in your area. Additionally, SAMHSA also awarded the department $3.7 million to respond to the mental health effects of flooding in 2019. In February and March 2019, 59 Tennessee counties sustained significant damage from severe weather, and FEMA responded with a disaster declaration. Funding under this grant will support mental health crisis services, behavioral health safety net services, and substance use treatment recovery services. These latest grant announcements come on top of a $2 million grant from SAMHSA to respond to the behavioral health impacts of COVID-19 and a $500,000 grant from FEMA to respond to the impacts of the March tornadoes. And that is what I have.
All righty. Well, very much, Kirby. We really appreciate that, and we'll look forward to receiving that from you. At this time, I'd like to ask, I see that we have Kubra on, so I'd like to ask Kubra to start the MCO reports for us from United Healthcare. Kubra, can you share that with us, please?
Yes, hi. I would like everybody to know that I'm still here. I'm still supporting the community events and sponsorships. And if you have anything going on, please email me. I would help you put on an event together. I'm not sure about these Zoom meetings. I'm just learning it as we go along with everybody. But I would help with anything you may need in the community. And if you have any sponsorships, any events coming up, please let me know. We're here for you.
All right.
That's all I have.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate that. And at this time, I'll ask if anybody from Susan, I know you're here from AmeriGroup, are you prepared to give a report on behalf of AmeriGroup? I don't know if you are.
Well, I can try.
Okay.
I'll be glad to try. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I'm covering for Renee, and Jan's covering the final hour, but I've never been to your meeting, but it sure is interesting. So, yes, we do have the MCO transition coming up, a meeting coming up in October. I guess that's next. Gosh, let me look at the date on my calendar. I'm sorry, I wasn't prepared to give a report, but let's see. October the 21st and the, 27th and the 28th. That's mainly for providers. I don't know if y'all ever attend that or not, but we give the THL and PCMH updates from 10Care and the MCOs. So it's a 2-day virtual that we're doing. So Mayor Group is in charge and running that this month. Mm-hmm. Jan, I know you're on the line. I don't know if she's on or not. She's covering the last task. Is there any particular items that Renee usually reports on that you would like information about?
Generally, what we're looking for you guys is if you have any new initiatives or initiatives for clients that are available. And if you don't, that's just fine. That makes for a nice brief report, and we appreciate that.
Well, we are doing some initiatives with SUD and OUD, but that's all I guess I'll get off for right now.
Thank you, Susan, and thank you for doing that on the spot. Appreciate it. Okay. At this time, I want to know if Barbara Ann Nelson is on the call from Blue Care. I didn't see her. All right. Okay, it does not appear so. We're going to go ahead and move on to our committee report. I don't know if I saw that Serene Johnson is on. I don't believe she was. And I will give people time to unmute. But does not appear so. Evelyn and Shara, I'm going to move on to you two for the adult committee report, please. Are you going to take you off of unmute there, Evelyn?
Okay. This is Evelyn. Hi, it's everybody this morning. Shara and I are pulling our committee together, and we're probably going to have a meeting the end of next week, so we don't have a report today.
All right. Thank you. And I do know that you guys have started
yes.
to begin really looking at things through conversations that we have had. So I appreciate the two of you come together, and we are looking forward to what you're looking to focus on.
Okay, thank you.
All right. And Evelyn, do we want to give a shout out to anybody to join you two as far as the adult committee goes with any ideas they might have?
Well, right now we are kind of still pulling together some folks. We talked to some people who have some very interesting ideas.
Okay.
Can't call any names right now.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. And then Elliot, I believe you have joined us. There you are. Could you please share a brief update with us for the legislative committee?
Absolutely, and sorry I was a few minutes late, everybody, but good to hear and see some folks. And I am the chair for the Legislative Committee for Region 4, and we had a meeting earlier this month and where we met, and it was myself and Angie Thompson, Susan Mee, and Jennifer Jones. I also had a sidebar meeting with Robin as well, where we discussed the legislative proposal ideas for 2021. That process is going to be moving pretty quickly right here alongside with the needs assessment as well. And we have a lot of ideas, but we're very open to any ideas the rest of you all may have. And I'll ask if anybody may not be on mute to please mute yourself, because it's very difficult to speak clearly here. But I'll say we talked about issues such as housing. We talked about the recent executive orders and workforce issues and telehealth and all of these things. And a bit of news for anybody who may not be aware, it's a little bit of old news now, but a bill was passed in Tennessee that allows an expanded use of telehealth with fewer restrictions through April of 2022. There also are restrictions lifted through the executive orders that the governor has been issuing and continuing to renew monthly recently. And we expect those to continue as we see a rise in cases of coronavirus. So telehealth should be much more widely available. We're hearing it's being used quite a bit and mostly positive results. So we're excited to know that there's more people who can access care. And we decided as a committee that we're going to be meeting quarterly and setting a regular schedule that similar to how we meet as a regional council. And we're going to do the months immediately following the meeting times for the full coalition. So while the full coalition meets in February and May and so on, we're going to meet in March and June and from there. So we'll be setting a date and time soon. We'll have a we'll create a Zoom room for that, at least for the interim. And I'll make sure that information gets out to everybody once we decide on a standard time and date. We definitely would love more people who are interested, even if you have no interest in ever writing a legislative proposal, but you have ideas to share, you want to learn, be a part of the process, we'd love to have you be part of our committee. Feel free to reach out to me after this meeting, or you can send me a message here in the chat, would be just fine. So other than that, I want to celebrate the fact that nationally, it took a little while, but the National Suicide Prevention Act, I'm not sure the exact name for that, but the 988 suicide hotline number, that law officially has passed and been signed into federal law. So we're excited to see some increased, hopefully, public relations work and other things to promote that number and talk about mental health and helping people be able to connect to mental health professionals when maybe the only opportunity some folks have maybe to call law enforcement, for example. So we celebrate this and are very excited. And we did have one thing we wanted to ask, and I see that I think, well, he was on the call. If Kurt is still on the call or anybody from the department, I was going to ask if there may be any update on our legislative proposal from last year that we agreed would be withdrawn while the department had a conversation with the Department of Health regarding workforce shortages and the potential for a survey or other measures to begin working strategically on that. Is Kurt still here? He may have dropped off.
I think he may have dropped off, Elliot.
Okay. Well, if the department has a response, Kirby, if you don't mind, we would love an update just to see if there has been any progress. If there's not, we can just note that. But our committee decided we wanted to request an update, so I'm doing so via this meeting.
All right. Hey, Elliot. This is Avis. I think Kurt had to hop off the call for another meeting or something. No, we do not have an update, but what we can do is reach out to Zach Blair and see if he has any information to share, and then we can share that information with you.
Sounds great. I think the committee would appreciate it. Thank you so much. That's all I have.
Thanks, Elliot.
Thank you, Ellen. Thank you, Ava, very much. All right. At this time, we're very much looking forward to, we started this process last year with the help of Angie Thompson and Julie Thacker, after our Region 4 Council members decided that we would make needs assessment the primary focus of this gathering. And so as we did last November, we are going to again this year with a little adaptation to COVID. We are going to go ahead and turn this over to Julie Thacker and ask her to introduce herself. We know she is coming from the health department, and we really appreciate the time that you are sharing with us today. She will fill you in on the process that we are going to use to work through the needs assessment. And one of the reasons that we're doing this is so that quieter voices can be heard. We want to hear from all of you. We want your participation. So without further ado, Julie Thacker, would you please introduce us to what we're going to introduce yourself, anyone with you, and what we're planning to do today. Thank you.
Hi, Robin. Yes, good morning. I'm Julie Thacker. I work with the Metro Public Health Department here in Nashville, and previously had a role in behavioral health and now working primarily on HIV related to the Ending the HIV Epidemic initiative. But as you all know, everything that we do in public health and is connected, and particularly connected to behavioral health. And so that's been really.
Pull that cup over before you knock it over. Not to the edge.
And if you are not muted at this time, we appreciate knowing what's happening wherever you are, but I think you'd rather be muted. So do please mute your phones at this time. Thank you.
So I also have Heather Snell with me. Thank you so much to Heather. She's going to be helping with the facilitation, particularly later when we get to the point where we're starting to share out. So some things just to be aware of, as those of you who were participated last year, you're aware, but in case, you know, you weren't a part of this last year. So this is what Robin and Angie asked me to do today was bring a consensus-based facilitation process, which several of us in the health department have been trained in. It's called the Technology of Participation Top Facilitation Methods. And the purpose, as Robin alluded to, is to be able to get all voices included in the process. And so part of that, what I'm asking for everyone to do is, I know that it's so easy and tempting when we're doing this virtually to multitask, but it's, you know, when you're talking about this kind of process, doing a needs assessment and everybody's voice is, you know, being asked to be included, you know, try to listen as actively as possible to what the ideas that are being put forward by your colleagues on this call. Something else that I like to ask is, please answer the question being asked. So it is human nature, especially when you're advocates for a certain, you know, you're advocates for your cause, and you probably came into this meeting burning with a certain need in mind. But I would ask you right now to just kind of think about what it is that's really coming up for you, and maybe write it down, write down that thing that you want to make sure we don't forget, that question you want to make sure doesn't go unanswered. And I promise you, I've written in a space to where right before we go into the process where we'll be, you know, kind of starting to list out the ideas, there will be time for if your question went unasked, or if the thing that you were burning to say didn't come up through the process, that you'll have a chance to say that then. But the way that the facilitation flows is intentional to kind of get everybody's mind kind of working in the same way, and to get towards resolution in a very intentional way. And if it's possible, Kirby, I don't know if you saw my message, or if you can change your name on your own. I don't know if it's possible, but just so I am going to call on everybody individually as we go through the process. You absolutely have the ability to say pass, or, you know, just come back to me or whatever if you don't have an answer to that question in the moment. But if you can update your names and the call-in numbers with at least your first name. So
Hi, Julie. If individuals have called in, we can't change it. It might just be good to ask, you know, the individual with a 615 ending in 28 number and state their name and their preference.
Okay. All right. Yeah, usually when on WebEx, I can just right-click on their name on the right, but it hasn't come up as renamed for me, but since I'm not the host, it doesn't let me do
it. It did for me. Thank you, Julie. It did for me. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Okay, I can go ahead and do that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I we're all learning new
yes.
WebEx.
So Julie, then we'll Amy. I know you're Kirby Amy. And so could you change your name? Is that possible?
No, I can't change mine.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
So just anybody that sees Amy, that's Kirby. And
yep.
Then 28 ending, I think was that Rama? And so I don't think you see anything other than I see based on Zoom, but can we just quickly go through and ask if you're a phone with a 28 ending, was that Rama Muhammad? Could you confirm, please?
That's me.
Okay. And who do we have at that 32 ending?
I'm trying to get it.
Uh, Our phone number ending in 32.
That one's, I'm sorry, that's me, Bill Frisco-Warren.
Bill, thank you, Bill, from Park Center. And 62 ending, please.
62 is me. I don't know if there's another person. This is Rama, by the way.
Rama, okay, who was 32? I mean, excuse me. How you doing, Kirby? You getting okay?
Yeah, it's freezing on me. So 32 is Bill. I'm trying to get it. I'm renaming. It does not want to work for me.
Okay, 28 was Rama. 62 is Patrick? Or was that was 32, wasn't it, Patrick?
I'm 32. My last two digits of my phone number, is that the question?
If that's star.
Yes, I'm 32. My name is 32.
Appreciate it. Bill, were you 62? Bill,
yes, I'm sorry, I misspoke. 62.
Okay, thank you. And so, who do we have that's 05 in the last two?
Hey, this is Susan. Me.
Susan, me?
I just joined twice, yeah.
I'm also on the computer, though, so.
Okay, thank you. All right, I think that's everybody.
Hi, Julie. This is Avis. With the exception of me and Kirby, since we work for the department, we'll try to abstain and let the council themselves discuss. But any support or questions that need to be answered, we can definitely help with that. But I just wanted to let you know that.
Thank you, Avis.
All right, Julie, I think we're ready to roll.
All right. Thank you so much. So I'm going to go in the order that you appear to me, but Heather and Avis and Kirby, if you're all helping me keep an eye on how people might be moving around the screen, I don't know if we see it the same way. But so the first question is for those of you who were involved last year with the needs assessment facilitation, what do you remember about the process? And if you weren't involved, instead you can share what you know about the needs that were prioritized last year. So Angie, you're first for me, if you can go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Julie. I think the thing that stood out for me last year was that everybody's voice was heard. And then I also like the fact that we kept track of everything, all the ideas, what we prioritized and what we didn't prioritize last year. So we do have a record of what we did last year. And I think that was important that everything was captured, even if it didn't make it to the level of being put forth to the department.
Thank you, Angie. Dia, I don't know if you were involved last year, but what stands out to you about what was prioritized last year?
Hi, everyone. I was not involved last year. I think I did see the notes from the facilitation, and I just think it's interesting to see what emerges as priorities and what are consistent issues year to year. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Can we remind everyone that the priorities that were established last year were emailed to you with the invitation to this meeting? They are attached in case you'd like to read them.
Robin, what stands out to you about what was prioritized last year?
Sometimes it's the same things. I'm going to quickly in front of me. What we ended up submitting, was we prioritized data collection on a 24-hour certificate of need sign when someone was at an emergency room and decreasing the amount of time to get that certificate of need signed. And then an increase to access to outpatient counseling and psychiatric appointments was another one. Increasing the number of medication-assisted treatment, MAT providers throughout the state, and increasing the number of recovery housing and independent living beds. So what I think was interesting to me was the fact that the independent living beds and recovering housing has we've done that before. So that is still coming up. As MAP has increased, I think the attention increased to it. And then I think we were noticing back then that people just weren't getting to the counseling that they needed. And the psychiatry appointments, we were seeing, I think, workforce shortage there. And then acknowledging that we needed a decrease in time, even though we've been working on this before. So some of the same issues, a couple, you know, something a little newer, but just consistency, the consistent need is what I was saying.
Thank you, Robin. I just want to remind everyone, too, at the end, we'll have two different lists. We'll have a list of substance abuse and a list of mental health needs. But when we're going through the facilitation and talking about them, we can talk about them together. So if you want to say, well, this is what I've seen with mental health and this is what I've seen with substance abuse. I'm going to switch up the question on Erica. So what have you noticed or heard in the community during the last 6 months or 7 months now of COVID?
Some of the things that I've noticed the needs were along the lines of having mental health assessments done. I know individuals are feeling as if with COVID that some of the services are not as attainable as readily as they were before, just because of the measures they have to take with the social distancing and things of that nature. So I think that even though it is there, I think that some of the need is, how should I put it? I don't want to say for more rapid, but just I think the weight and the pushback has been some concern for not being able to A, do them in person, and B, I think that some of the clientele, they are unable to feel as if they're getting the service met through the telehealth health platform, as they would if they would be doing it face-to-face. And that's really all that I have really heard. If I think of anything else, I'll definitely put it in the chat.
Thank you, Erica. Evelyn, what have you noticed or heard in the community for the past 7 months?
I'm sorry. What I've heard has been similar. The need for treatment, the need for housing, some of the very things we looked at in the plan for last year, the needs assessment. Earlier this year, it's just been enhanced on what the needs are. People are losing their housing, and not so much because of maybe evictions, is that properties are being sold. And sometimes when they're sold, they don't include the present residents going with them. So we have, on a daily basis, people coming in saying that their housing has been sold, and so they're out. And some of these people are not accustomed to going to the mission of other shelters, so it brings on an additional stress along with the COVID. So we have seen hospitalizations going up, and then people are also, because of this stress, is turning to outside drugs. So it's kind of intermingling the whole piece.
Thank you, Evelyn. Supra, what have you noticed or heard in the last 7 months? You're muted. It looks like you're unmuted now.
Are you talking to me? I'm sorry, I didn't realize you're talking to me. I'm with the United Healthcare Community Plan. I'm one of the managed care organizations. I'm not an official member of this committee. I'm just here to observe.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Sheldon, what have you noticed or heard in the last 7 months?
Hey, good morning, everybody. Just mostly, I work with SPAC, the Suicide Prevention African American Community Coalition, and we really heard of uncertainty. People are not easily adjusting to what's going on. As far as suicide, it has been very prevalent, and the numbers are increasing. I think in Davidson County, we're up to about 18 or 19 a month. We are doing a good job getting the word out about how people can cling to resources and counselors, things they can do when they're feeling stressed. But just the uncertainty, like somebody said, losing resources, losing their house, is playing a big role in the stress level and depression and even attempted suicide.
Thank you, Sheldon. Susan?
Susan, me?
Yeah.
I'm an attorney in private practice, so my perspective is going to be a little bit different. I would echo what others have said about, you know, the impact of COVID. Other than that, I don't have anything else to add right now.
Thank you. I'm going to go back to Susan Henson.
Yeah, and I'm with Amerigroup, and I would like to address the needs. I've looked over that now, and I want to share with you, and y'all probably are very aware, but, you know, Chin Care and the MCOs are working on the MAT initiatives. We've met with we're meeting with a hospital in each region to work on MAT initiation in the ED, which I think is just an awesome process that's going to happen. And I think it'll, it's been really exciting that MCS coming together with Chin Care and then working with particular hospitals. And then Amerigroup is also working with individual hospitals in different regions as well. And our MAT providers has just grown so, and I know y'all are aware of that, but we have so many more providers now than we did a year ago. I mean, and so that's really important. And also, I was reading over the transportation issues, and I live in the West, and I actually do ER diversion for Amerigroup, so that was very interesting to me to see those needs at Jackson General and the transportation needs. So that I find that very interesting, and we'll follow up on that. Something is, or if there's something, anybody in particular that I could talk with on that, that was interesting. But I think that I've also worked with the Navigators some and their new project that they're doing in Rutherford County. So I'm very aware of their MAT work there. So I think all those needs are so great, but I think we are making some headway with our MAT initiation and education.
Thank you, Susan. Bill, I'm going to change the question up on you just a little bit. So what have you noticed and heard in the past year? So you can encompass things that are COVID-related or non-COVID-related.
Julie, did you say Bill?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Hey. Well, if I could, I know you said answer the question, but the previous question, I was just wanting to put in that I was a little surprised that we focused mental health increase on transitional housing rather than, say, permanent housing for folks in the last go round. But I've been hearing from housing providers, particularly like traditional group home providers who typically have fairly stable sources of rent in the SSI, SSDI checks of their tenants, that due to additional costs and living costs, whether it's transportation and other things, that they nonetheless had folks fall behind with a rent, even though they had a stable, if not exactly robust, source of income. So I guess that's one that sticks out, one for me.
Thanks, Bill. Mm-hmm. Pamela? What about you? What have you noticed or heard in just the last year? So it could be related to COVID or otherwise. I can see you, but we can't hear you. It looks like you're unmuted, but we still can't hear you, Pamela.
Okay, how's that? I am muted like 3 times. So can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So being out in the community, one of the things that individuals are missing are the peer support centers, that socialization. So we see an increase in depression and even other mental health issues, too. They're truly missing that, and I wish there's a way we could find to get those centers open, at least on a in a smaller capacity, something to encourage members. I mean, we talk to individuals that have depression and even anxiety that, you know, getting out and socializing and meeting with friends is good. And this has truly had an impact on them. And I think that's why you see such an increase in substance use, in hospitalizations, and people's symptoms. So, I just wanted to share that. We need to find a way to get those peer centers back open.
Thank you, Pamela. Dalmy, D-A-L-M-Y.
Hello.
Hi.
I apologize for my name not being spelled right. I did not do it. That was the first time I did a WebEx thing, somebody put it like that, but it's Dalmis, and I'm with Disability Rights Tennessee. I was not a part of anything last year. This is my first meeting. I just looked at the recording from 2 meetings ago, but I'm not sure what I can tell you other than what I have heard through my work about the impact of COVID-19 on our community. And this is for everybody, not just the mental health clients, but there have been lots of issues with visitation when people live in group homes or are in hospitals. And the agency has done some systemic work around those things. Also, people being able to bring their personal companion, but this is more for maybe those that are developmentally and intellectually disabled that are not able to understand or make their own decisions, and they were having issues having their caretaker come in with them to appointments and in hospital visits. In education, I think we all know what all is going on there and the difficulties of kids with both behavior disorders or emotional disturbances, how hard that has been for them to do things virtually. And so that's just to name a few. There's a lot of systemic work going on in our agency, and a lot of good things are happening and a lot of collaborations. I heard that Susan Mee is here, and I was happy to hear her voice. And I know that she's collaborating with our agency in some projects out there. I wasn't prepared for a report, so I don't have a lot of detail, but there's a lot going on.
That's good. Thank you. Elliot, I'm going to change the question up on you just a little bit now. So I think you kind of have the broad look, so you probably be the best, you know, one of the best people to ask is, what has changed in the past year in terms of who is doing the work and the scope work being done in the region? So you can answer kind of one or both, but who, what has changed in the past year in terms of who is doing the work, like what organizations or, and then the scope of work being done in the region.
Okay. I will do my best to wrap my brain around that quickly and get an answer out. But that is a complicated question, and I certainly think telehealth is the obvious thing that jumps out to me as in terms of the who. And I think when we talk about who, you're right, you're looking at providers. I think you're looking at small businesses, and small businesses can include provider organizations and individual practitioners. So it's been a bit of a game changer for a lot of folks who may not have been used to doing things by telecommunication, that are used to in-person therapy, counseling, other kinds of treatment, and having to shift their entire models for service delivery very quickly. I've been on countless webinars locally and nationally of folks just trying to learn from each other. What are the best things to do? How do we engage people? So I think it's been a really steep learning curve for some. It's been easier for others who have been doing this a little bit more. But I feel like we've just seen a big shift. And I'm hearing both from the payers at a national level and from providers that the shift to telehealth is likely to be a permanent one in many different ways. While I don't expect that we're going to see people continue to do as much of it as they are now, there's going to be a lot more in-person care when it's more safe to do so. But I think a lot of the work is going to be shifted that way. I think a lot of employees are going to be asking for or being granted the ability to work remotely that may not have been able to do so beforehand. So there's going to be a lot of differences there. I think we need to, of course, prioritize in-person care whenever we can, and it's safe to do so. But there certainly are a lot of other really good options there. And in terms of the scope, I think our providers have really struggled, from my understanding, to keep up with their typical scope of practice. They've wanted to be delivering all of these rich services. We have amazing services available in our community in Davidson County, but how do we deliver them? As was said earlier, at the peer support centers, you know, that is a vital part of the treatment continuum for a lot of the folks that have mental health issues in our state and our community. And most of those folks are not able to access those. And some of those individuals may be less well-versed on technology to be able to shift to these remote learning opportunities. So that's another thing. And I think, you know, in terms of the others, we're talking about our kids, those who normally would be going to school, getting education. A great deal of the mental health services for children in our community, in our state, are delivered at the school or via a school-based resource. That is very, very challenging right now. So we've got a lot of folks who are not in school, can't get back to school. If we're talking about our county specifically, you know, teenagers and middle schoolers aren't going. They're at home, right? They're not able to speak up as much as they might have wanted to, that people are not able to observe things that might be warning signs of problems. And nationally, I think it's worth mentioning, just without going into too much data here, you know, there's one statistic that just I cannot get out of my head. And this is talking about, this is from the Census Bureau put this out. It was also a CDC publication, but it was looking at, they didn't look at the kids because they surveyed adults only, but in the youngest group surveyed, 18 to 24 year olds, and this was captured as snapshot at the end of June, 25.5% of 18 to 24 year olds in America said they seriously considered suicide in the last 30 days. That is, astronomical is not even the right word. It's frightening. It's harrowing. It's traumatic. And at the same time, in terms of going back to the who of the question, our workforce is dwindling. We're hearing there's not a lot of great hard data yet. I expect we'll get some hopefully in the coming months. But I heard again at this national payers conference talking about a lot of providers and physicians were mentioned, specifically a group that's known for a higher rate of suicide than among many other professions, that there's more physician suicide deaths than they've seen in quite some time. And people are exiting the workforce at a time when we need more people in the workforce. You know, we already knew that more than half of all psychiatrists were going to be exiting our field or retiring by 2025. And this was before pandemic. So a lot of these troubling numbers just say the who is more important than ever in terms of who's providing the care. We need to support our providers, and we need to make sure that they have the reimbursement they need, as well as the people power to make it work. So we have our work cut out for us.
Thank you, Elliot. That was an excellent summary. I'm going to ask if anybody else has any kind of who or scope or anything that didn't come out in this first section of questions to add it to the chat. And somebody help me that if I miss it showing up in the chat. I see somebody adding some information there now. So the first section of questions really is to get the data out, and that is the purpose, and I appreciate that this came out. So some of the data that we heard, hospitalizations are up, suicide is up, self-medication is up. Specifically, Sheldon shared that 17 to 18 suicides per month in Davidson County, but we know we're looking at the region too. Suicidal ideation, Elliot just shared, 25% of 18 to 24-year-olds considering suicide in the past month. Youth needs are increasing. The workforce is dwindling. 50% of psychiatrists retiring by 2025. Okay, so that's some of the data that's on the table. Now we're going to switch up the question again, and people are moving around on the screen, but Jack, I think you are next. So going with some of the positive, what progress has been made toward meeting the needs that were prioritized last year?
I'm sorry, could you say that again? You were cutting in and out. I apologize.
Sure. What progress has been made toward meeting the needs that were prioritized last year? Around substance abuse or mental health?
I think for the past 2 years, I've been doing on-the-ground street outreach with people experiencing homelessness in Nashville. And some of the progress that we have made in that arena has been telehealth, the ability to meet people where they live, whether it's in a campsite or under a bridge, and be able to do a telehealth visit with them there, which was not an option beforehand. So I think moving forward, that's something that can be carried forward in a way that's pretty positive to people who are either unable or because of physical issues or because mentally they're just not able to go and sit in a waiting room to be able to get the care that they need. So that's been definitely a positive.
Thank you, Jack. I've heard the same thing, and it's surprising when you think you hear, you know, there are definitely segments of the population that have barriers to telehealth, and some of the barriers that we would expect aren't showing up, too. So it's been pretty unusual, pretty interesting to look at that. Jan, are you on the line?
Hi, this is Jan.
Hi, Jan. Did you hear the question? So we're talking about the needs. Last year's needs assessment, and just what's, you know, been happening over the past year, and starting with the positive, and asking what progress has been made towards meeting the needs that were prioritized last year.
I don't have a response for you. I honestly haven't seen the report you're talking about. Can you give me a little more information?
Sure. So Robin had sent it out in the email. So we can pass and come back to you. I know you just joined the meeting.
Yeah.
I don't want to put you on the spot.
Give me a chance.
Okay. Yeah.
Julie, would it help if I could do it in like 30 seconds, run through the four needs from last year? I've got them in front of me.
For it, Elliot.
Okay, so quickly, there were two mental health needs and two addiction-related needs. The mental health needs were decreasing the time to 24 hours or less between the first signed certificate of need until placement into an acute inpatient hospital situation. So just reducing the time people wait from the time they are deemed to need hospitalization to where they can actually get admitted. The next need for mental health is increasing access to outpatient counseling and psychiatric appointments so that people can maintain their recovery and prevent crises. Under substance use, increasing the number of medication-assisted treatment, MAT, providers throughout the state and our county. And then the other one was increasing the number of recovery housing and independent living beds. Hope that's helpful.
Sure. Well, I can talk about the increase of the MAT network, and it has, you know, I don't know if you are getting the most current data on that, but that network is expanding, you know, monthly, really. It's much larger than it was a couple of years ago, and access to that is something we certainly want to make available to our members. We are still finding that members are paying for their medication, and we don't want them to be. There's been a lot of work on educating providers to make sure they know that they've got to do the PA in certain cases. It's not getting done, and there's been an education piece around that. So I don't know exactly I assume that you all have access to the MAT provider network. If you don't, we can make that happen. Philip Morrison at Amerigroup is the contracting person in charge of that, but it's readily available on a portal, and you know, it's expanding and has a great deal of oversight and accounting and auditing, because that is something that has to be monitored pretty closely. They've changed the name of MAT to BSmart, and the acronym is taking a look at the treatment side of it, that we really want the counseling side of it to be as important as the medication side of it. You know, there's been some changes in the past few years about how long you can stay on the MAT, that for some people, you know, a maintenance is going to be a part of their recovery. And so getting our recovery programs, our transitional housing and other areas educated about the need for MAT, and making it permissible for folks to come in on MAT and stay on MAT, because, you know, we used to have a difficulty with some of our RTCs even allowing MAT and our recovery homes to allow MAT. So there's been a huge focus on educating and incorporating MAT or BSmart now into the mainstream, and not have it be some, you know, off to the side issue, that really is a mainstream treatment. We are working really hard at making it more readily available. I don't have stats on that, but I can certainly get that to you. And then your other question about the certificate of need, that one I cannot answer. I would have to defer to Renee on that, and she's not able to be on the call, so I don't have an answer for that one.
Thank you, Jan. I just want to point out too some things that came out in the chat. You know, the additional data that Tom provided around the increase on anxiety, depression, trauma are up this year, especially among youth. And then to some of the positive things that are shared, that, you know, people being able, who were previously maybe too interested to come to an in-person group, are joining online, and then Shara also sharing, you know, more people to doing the online telehealth, so that increase in access too. And if you have any other positives that have come out in the last year, please continue to share those in the chat. I'm going to switch up the question again on Kurt and ask, so it might be kind of obvious and it might have already come out, but what struggles or challenges have you experienced in the past year And I think too, you know, not just thinking externally about the challenges in delivering or the challenges in delivering services, but also, you know, thinking internally too. I think with the workforce, everybody's struggling, right? Not just the clients that we're serving. So you can think about this either, you know, in terms of yourself individually or the clients you're serving.
Well, I know a challenge that I recently heard from a patient, and that was that they had been able to have telephonic visits, and one of the providers was not allowing that any longer. And this person was unable to, you know, their link was not adequate, so the Zoom meeting kept breaking up. And so they were told, you've got to come into the clinic and we'll put you in a room and you can do Zoom with the counselor in another room. But it made it, you know, it became a barrier because, you know, they're having to go on site to be virtual. And so I can see how that could be a problem. But I also see, especially with MAT or some things where you really kind of need to look in somebody's eyes, where it would be really important. So I see both sides of it.
Thanks, Jen. So I guess Kurt isn't on the line and is also with the department. Sorry about that. Patrick, we'll go to you. Are you on the line?
I'm here. I'm sorry, Julie. What was the question? I was typing up a response in the chat.
Oh, that's okay. You can do that. So I know that those of you with the department may or may not want to contribute. This is totally up to you. The question was just, you know, personally or in the delivery of services, what struggles or challenges have you experienced in the past year?
I would say that a lot of what has already been stated, just the transition to the telehealth services that had to happen back in March when the pandemic really started going. I think what our challenge always is trying to go after as many funding sources as we can possibly find, and we've been fairly successful going after some federal grants. One of them that we're really excited about that's just getting started is the Project Rural Recovery, which is going to have some mobile crisis clinics going across some more rural counties to really open up access there. I saw what I was typing up in the chat was, you know, challenges with the children's behavioral health system here in the state. While not completely addressed by what the legislature appropriated this year, we're really excited about the investment they're making in the creation of the new Children's Behavioral Health Safety Net and the expansion of the school-based behavioral health liaisons, and how many kids that's going to reach, and not just kids, but the families that those kids belong to. There's a lot of different things, and I've heard y'all talking about MAT. That's always been a big challenge. I was lucky enough to work a lot on those rules and the guidelines. And one of the issues that got resolved this year that had been a struggle for a while was how to expand that prescription authority to physician assistants and to nurse practitioners. And that was able to get worked out this year. Very excited about the capacity that will bring to the state, and hopefully that will result in more access. The department people, we usually try to stay out of these discussions as much as possible, but thanks for the opportunity to add the state perspective to that.
Thank you, Kurt. Patrick, any other struggles that you have experienced or, you know, your clients have experienced?
Well, I would like to expound on some of the challenges and also struggles, and not to be redundant, but I'm facing some of the same challenges. I won't say so much as struggles, because we're all binding together to each one help one and trying to transition within the last year of what has taken place, the unknown for all of us. Again, transitioning is a big challenge, adapting not only to change within the housing or as a provider, but challenging and changes with telehealth, and just to name a couple. One of the major challenges that I personally have had was adapting to the emotional stress of individuals' socialization, as far as being able to go out in public, now having to quarantine, having a social distance, you know, telehealth one moment or one day. I agree to telehealth, the next day I'm having a problem and I don't want to talk to anyone, don't want to be on telehealth, don't want my doctor visit, trying to figure out why I can't go out to see my doctor, see my nurses, and whatnot. And then another major challenge is housing. I think maybe Evelyn may have mentioned it earlier, expound upon housing. Affordable housing is just a nightmare in there. Right now, you know, with the growth of Nashville or Davidson County itself still taking place and taking part, seeing more and hearing more providers needing beds, needing housing, and it's just, you know, it's really is hard to compete with some of the investors coming in, swallowing up every acre, every house that's available within a certain radius of downtown Nashville. And the challenge of putting affordable housing together and beds for individuals that have been sold, for individuals that's now wanting to come off of the street, not wanting to be homeless any longer. So just to name a couple of things, I can go on and on, but again, those are some of the challenges that I'm facing. Transportation has always been a challenge. Housing has always been a challenge. Trying to make sure that these things don't become a struggle. But overall, everyone input and consideration of changes that the housing market is going through right now is very, very important, that we can all work together. And giving suggestions on how to adapt, how to adjust during these very trying times for us all.
Thank you, Patrick.
Nope. You're welcome.
Rama, I'm going to switch up the question on you again. And again, we've heard some of this already, but maybe if there's anything that's still out there that hasn't been said. So how have the crises of the past 7 months, 8 months reshaped the mental health and substance abuse needs and response?
I don't want to repeat what everybody say, but mainly I have been having a hard time for placement for clients who have no income and who are coming out of the hospital or insurance. I've been having an issue with housing, you know, single moms with kids, and also housing individuals who have a dual diagnosis of, you know, intellectual disability and mental illness. So those are kind of like a gap of services. And I think for the single parents, single moms with kids, more case management and more hands-on work. They need with in order for them and their little ones to have stable housing and, you know, for mom to function better in order for her, you know, to leave with mental illness at the same time, remain in recovery and take care of her children. So those are programs that I have seen that may not, they may need help having more progression on it.
Thank you. I do think a lot of this has been covered in terms of the reshape of the landscape and the adaptation to that. So, but if you have anything to add that wasn't, if you will add that to the chat, and I'm going to switch the question again for Shara. So what changes do we still need to make in order to meet the changing needs? What changes do we still need to make in the system in order to meet the changing needs?
Julie, did you say that's for me?
Yes.
Okay, that's a big question. oh my goodness. I think one thing that we need to recognize is that the people that we serve, we have to figure out a way to be able to provide the direct hands-on care that many of them need. I've seen that some of our consumers have been doing fairly well with the support they've been able to get through online and teleservices, but others, we've seen others kind of definitely fall between the cracks. And I know that there's a lot of fear around COVID still for service providers and limitations into how services can be provided, who's willing to provide those services. But the reality is that we serve, a lot of us serve a population that we just have to be able to get out there and help them and be supportive. I think the peer support centers, the day programs, the opportunities for people to get out of their, you know, the four walls that they live in is really important. And the expectation for our providers, and I tend to go back on case management type services, but that's a service that it's, we just can't do justice through a phone call only. Housing, I know that there's the CARES money. I know Salvation Army has some rapid rehousing money. I think that's good, but we have gaps in housing as far as the type of housing that, that we need. It seems like our options right now are either mental health group homes that are definitely needed for a certain population, or their recovery transitional type housing, which also serves a huge need. But we are seeing more people who don't necessarily fit in those categories. They need housing. They need housing that could ultimately become permanent housing, housing with some type of support service surrounding it, so that we're not just putting people into homes or apartments without the skill set that they need to be able to maintain housing. And then service-wise, with the reality that we are seeing an increase in mental health and an increase in substance abuse, just access to those services, particularly the substance abuse services, we tend to have a difficult time finding substance abuse treatment for people who are indigent or don't have the right type of insurance.
Thank you, Shara.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, I think you may have said some of this in the chat, but you want to share changes that we still need to make in the system in order to meet the changing needs?
Yeah, I did put it in chat. I think anything we can do to continue to normalize the fact that there is no health without mental health, that your mental health is as important as your physical health, that loneliness, isolation, your unhealthy ways that you're coping This is all, you know, part of the pandemic. This is something to where, you know, it's real, it's treatable, to continue the healthcare navigation that has been going on. Of course, here in Middle Tennessee, we do have the My Healthcare Home navigation tool to direct people to their nearest charitable clinics, many of which do offer some mental health services. We also, I've just been really impressed with what the department has done as far as outreach messaging to the community, which continues just to be so important. But, you know, we know that there's a lot of people who have experienced death of family members, high anxiety and trauma rates of family members who have an essential worker in their family, just worried about them, and the essential workers worried about their family members. To make those sources available in multiple languages, I think, is also very important. We have found a real need with Spanish-speaking populations. And just, again, to try to normalize that and overcome any residual stigma, which really I think people are trying to get help. A lot of people are, their practices are full. And, you know, anything we can do to extend governor's executive orders to continue this through the holidays and just past the holidays would be fantastic, because a lot of people are going to be going home or visiting family for the first time and only just now seeing them for the first time. And I just think that this is going to be so important when they say, wow, mom is not doing well. My sibling is not doing well, and just trying to make sure that everyone knows where to turn for help.
Thank you, Tom. Gary? Ooh, I echoed there. What changes do we still need to make in the system to meet the changing needs?
I think some of the big changes are making some of our temporary solutions permanent, like telehealth. Coming up with other ideas for something I see a lot in my clients is just a lack of socialization opportunities.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. Tristan, what changes do we still need to make?
Are you asking me?
Yes. Yeah. So what changes do we still need to make in the system in order to meet changing needs?
Gosh. I'm not like throwing me back in the fire. honestly, I'm sitting here kind of taking everything in and honestly noticing, even with pandemic, what has taken place since meeting with this committee, the work that I've seen done is, I know it's pretty amazing from when I was a small part of the Region 4 committee. All I would be able to do is pretty much echo what I've heard other people.
Thank you, Tristan. And Sharon, I think you're the last one on my list that I see. Anything to add around changes that we still need to make in order to meet changing needs? Says W. Sharon Ross.
That'll be Willie Ross. Okay.
Willie.
The biggest changes that I'm seeing, and it's overloading our ER system and our mental health system here, is that we have so many people being sent given one-way bus tickets and being sent to Nashville. They've had from like Texas where they've had mental issues for going on 2 weeks. They have physicians there. They have medical care there. But then they decide, well, we're going to come here. And the majority of them is Nashville will take care of us because it's free. So we can get everything we need. And it kind of pushes all the people that we are trying to take care of here. It puts an overload on all of our healthcare systems. So it's almost as if trying to take care of the ones here are being overshadowed by the ones that are coming in. And that's even down to the homeless population. It has increased drastically with the COVID and everything. They're getting sent here. And it's like saying, well, Tennessee has got to take care of them. And that's not fair to the people here in Tennessee, because even though residential areas, there are new houses being built, they're still not going to be enough. They're throwing up apartment buildings left and right. Some of them are Section 8, but they still cannot afford to live there. So that's the increase on the mental health, the mental illness, the co-occurring substance abuses, the overdoses. It's just pushing them in a dark space, in a dark place, and it's hard for them to come out.
Thank you, Willie. So now we're going to take some time just to yourself and, oh, nope, I promise. One, did I miss anyone? Before we go into kind of writing the needs, so that's the next step, is to actually start to get the needs down on paper. Did I miss anyone, or were there any burning questions that went unanswered, or just statements that that you came to this conversation needing to say?
Julie? This is Diaz Cirillo. I just wanted to add, here are two issues that we see emerging from the Community Mental Health Systems Improvement Network. One is that there seems to be a bottleneck on the panel for children. This might be answered by the department's new programming and funding, but it likely might not be. And we've heard this from the schools, and we've heard this from a provider. The other issue that we've heard is also among the youth population, which is availability of inpatient beds, residential, at the time of crisis, where a child that might be in juvenile court can get into residential within a 24-hour period and does not have to wait 72 hours or more. So those are two issues that keep getting, we keep hearing.
Julie, this is Robin. One of the things we saw consistently over the summer, well, from basically from May through mid-September, was an increase in calls, 60% increase in calls, and the age of the caller is what was made it interesting, because normally our average type caller would be between 40 and 50 with a an adult, young adult child with severe mental health, acute mental health issues. What we saw was the age went up to 65 plus, and we were getting adult parents, older adult parents, with an adult with chronic mental health issues who may have maintained perhaps gradually on their own, but because of COVID was kind of pushed over the edge and was going into psychosis, severe mania, acute symptoms of schizophrenia. And they were either kicked out of their home, may have had a job, and were needing, and were moving in with the parents. We ended up doing a lot of crisis intervention, acute crisis intervention with them. But what was interesting to us was the age of the callers. We saw a consistent rise in that. So I thought that was noteworthy.
everyone. Sorry, my computer just tried to shut down. And I said no to that. Was there anybody else? Okay. Angie and Robin, just for clarification before we before people start writing down, so I did hear some child mental health issues being brought up. Are those going to be handed over to the child mental health team to do a separate? They usually do that work group does a separate for the children, right?
They usually do their own, but I think if it's a strong enough issue, we could write needs assessments here if we see that. So I'd like us to track that. I mean, we'll go back to that committee, but I'd really like us to track that. Andy, what do you think?
I agree.
Okay, great. So the prioritization process is going to be done in this meeting. What we're going to do next is to write down what mental health and substance abuse needs do we need to address during the next year. So spend a few minutes and write down 3 to 5 ideas in each category. So when we're going forward, we're going to have substance abuse and mental health separated out. We're going to go back through round robin one at a time, and just keeping an eye on the clock, know that we don't need to elaborate too much, just kind of when we're reporting out next time, just stating the need. And after this meeting, Angie and Robin will be sending out a survey to do the prioritization. So we're just trying to get all of the ideas out at this meeting.
Julie, one thing I'd like to mention is we'd like 10 minutes at the end of the meeting, at 10 till, if it were possible, for us to be able to, one, catch up on any people that joined us late, and two, just sort of welcoming to some of those new members who are with us or anyone has very important announcements, and we're going to limit those, but if you have anything we absolutely need to hear about. So keep that in mind, that would be terrific.
So if y'all can just take 2 minutes and jot down 3 to 5 ideas under substance abuse and mental health, so the greatest needs to address during the next year.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone need another minute, or are we good to start rolling out? Okay.
Thank you. I was going to say, could we have Lawrence speaking mute, please?
Kirby, could you let, so Heather's going to be typing these up as people say them, just so you can see them up on the screen. It'll help us keep from repeating ideas when everybody gets their turn.
Did you want me to do that, Julie? You want me to share a screen and type it up?
But Heather's on the line.
Does she not have permission to share? Hold on one second. One second.
She may.
Let me see here. Thought she may have permissions, but let me see. Okay. Did it work? Can you share now, Heather? There we go.